of an individual person. People with more complex traumas or stronger emotional armor that they have around them, protective armor that they have around themselves.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Unlearn Everything. I'm excited to be here today. We're doing a later recording than we normally do, so we will not be live for any of these episodes today, and this will be recorded, and then we'll produce it a couple weeks later. But I'm Devo, and I'm glad to be here, your guide on this journey of discovery and insights. Today, we're diving into something that really affects all of us and something I never knew anything about. Our guest today is Aneta Shidletska. And she's been on a journey herself from uncovering these pathways of trauma and psychological abuse that we sort of incur throughout our lives, and figuring out ways to overcome those challenges. She's a former athlete, and she has learned some powerful lessons. She's a bunch of things, actually, and she's going to join us in a second and tell us all of the stuff that she's doing. But she does workshops. She's a healer. She's involved in anxiety and stress and just kind of helping people live a healthier, more functional life. How are you doing?
It's gorgeous. Thank you very much. What a beautiful introduction. And listen, I just want to say thank you very much for having me here. It is such a pleasure and honor. I have listened to so many of your episodes on so many of your podcasts, and they're so interesting. And I have to say, they're so different. You know what I mean? You just bring people with different skills and a little bit outside thinking, a little bit outside the box, which I find was very, very interesting. So,
well thank done. You. I appreciate that. We do find some fantastic people like yourself to come on the show. My whole point of this show is to, it's funny to me, I didn't realize this, and I'm sure you'll appreciate this. It's amazing how much stuff we have been taught that is just factually not true, and really serves to sort of degrade our lives, not make our lives better, whether it's financial wisdom, whether it's health wisdom, whether it's history of the world itself. I started the show because I wanted to bring people on like yourself that could sort of debunk all of the myths and all of the nonsense that we have been taught our entire lives. And we don't need to go down the rabbit hole of why. I think everybody sort of understands that. It's underscored in the show. But, you know, one of the things that I was most fascinated with you when I first discovered you is just sort of your candid take on the nervous system and relationships and trauma and empathy and hormonal development and all the things that we do with our bodies. And we take on this information and our bodies hold on to it and just store it. And it just manifests itself in negative ways if we don't deal with it. So thank you for being you and for all the brilliant stuff that you're talking about and sharing with the world. I really, really just fascinated by it. So just to get into you, you've transitioned from the high pressure, high stakes world of competitive athletics. You're now doing holistic work in the health industry. What was sort of the pivotal moment that made you realize the importance of aligning the mind and aligning the body and aligning the soul so that you can live a healthier version?
So I always been a little bit alternative. I've started my journey on sort of healing and self-discovery when I was 14. I was growing up in a very interesting household. And I was getting panic attacks to the point that I thought I'm losing my mind at age 14. And I'm like, goodness me, if I continue doing that. And at age 14, I had no idea what was going on with me. I just couldn't breathe. And I literally was scared that I'm losing my mind. So then I started reading more about psychology, understanding the dynamic at my house, and tried to coach myself on psychology. So sort of I became my own therapist. Then after that, I went study. I have master's degree, so I finished my university in Poland. But I didn't want to work in marketing and management. So I packed my bags and from Poland, had no money, moved to Ireland. After finishing master's degrees, I was cleaning tables and washing dishes in Irish pubs just to earn more money because I always wanted to come to Australia. And I came to Australia and I studied so many different things and I got myself into party scene. So I was party and, well, living very vibrant and colorful life in Sydney, as you do. And then in my 30s, I've decided to change my life and become a little bit more healthy. So I start training, open up my own personal training business, and then I was doing bodybuilding. So from a little bit of psychology and wisdom that I always read books about, knowing yourself, spirituality, psychology, I got more into mindset and how our mindset is impacting our physical body when we train. So I knew how to be strict and hard and disciplined and impact pain on my physical body, because that was something that I've learned from my childhood, that if I'm harsh, if I'm non-emotional, if I push through emotional blockages and pain, I will succeed. Yeah. So in bodybuilding, yeah.
No pain, no gain.
No pain, exactly. So yeah. My inner dialogue was, don't be weak.
Yeah.
Don't be, you know what I mean? And I remember being in the gym and training, and I had this toxic inner dialogue, and it's even shameful a little bit to admit now. I would look at people around me and I will judge them, and I would say, you're so weak. You know, it's all in your head. You tell yourself to do something, you override your emotions, and you just go through the pain. And I was doing well in bodybuilding. I was, you know, my first bodybuilding competition, I won in my category and I won in overall. And then I was winning and winning and winning. And I was pushing my body past the limit. I was pushing my body to the level that a few years of competing. And during that time, I had my personal struggles in relationships, and my body just shut down. I got adrenaline fatigue, fibromyalgia. I couldn't do anything. So I had all those muscles. I was still looking very strong and fit, and I couldn't even lift 2 kilo dumbbells or move elastic band, because all that toxicity, mental toxicity, all that pain that I was inflicting on myself, pushing myself physically, mentally, and emotionally, caused me adrenaline fatigue.
I want to unpack a few things. So, and I'm going to work backwards. It's an interesting paradigm, that whole idea of no pain, no gain, because I'm an athlete as well. I played sports all through college. I was an American footballer. And I played that through college. And in every situation, in every coach, at every grade level, from the beginning of my athletic career as a child, that, and from my dad as well, it was constantly hammered into us that you were a pussy if you didn't perform, if you didn't work hard, if you weren't the best, if you didn't come out on top, if you didn't kick someone's ass in the game. This is a true story. Yeah. I was playing in a football game. I was in high school, and so it was probably like a junior, maybe a third year in high school. And we were playing a program that was like a 3-hour road trip. And I guess for whatever reason, my dad thought I didn't play the best game. And so when he picked me up after my bus trip back, and this is at like 1 o'clock in the morning when we got home, like literally from a 3-hour drive after just playing in a football game, my dad made me get my equipment and go out to the football field with him, where he made me drill for like 3 hours at 1 o'clock in the morning, like just over and over. And the entire time he was berating me and telling me how I sucked in the game, and if he ever saw me play that way. And I just remember thinking, this can't be normal. But at 17 years old, 16 years old, you don't really feel like you have any choices. And so I just remember bottling all of that anger up inside. I literally just wanted to like lash out and kill this man. So I'm like, all my other friends are out partying and having a good, and I played a good game, man. I was like, I was a really good football player, but for whatever reason, I was never good enough for his standards. And so it was always like berating me and making me do more and more and more. And I just remember thinking at that point in time, I just remember thinking, man, like, how can I ever be enough? And so it wasn't until like 20, 30 years later when I finally started going to see a therapist. And this is a true story. I've never actually told the story before. I had completely forgotten all of those episodes. And I had sort of like just repressed them somehow. And through this hypnotic therapy that she did with me, I just basically exploded with all of these stories of all this stuff, kind of like I just told you. And it was some of the similar stuff that you do on a regular basis that she was talking about, you know, how we bottle all this stuff down and we just hold on to it. Yeah. And it's just like a tinderbox waiting to explode. So what is it about society that, how did we get away from this? Because I refuse to believe that we've always been this way. That was always this competitive edge, kill or be killed, destroy your enemy, like win at all costs, become the best. Have you studied any of the history of this, a sort of humanity around this?
Not really, but when you look at it, it's always been like that. We have always been very competitive because we have to survive. So looking at the human behavior, the survival of the fittest. So we always had to be the best, the hunters, you know, the warriors. But I think what was there as well, that was different, our community was different. We had tribes. We have a group of people when there was the event that we really, when you go hunting, then you get together and you share with others your experience, you know, how men will have those groups. Yes. Now I don't think that we have that. We have social media and it's still not as such of it is connection, but not really connection because we're scared to be fully seen because sometimes when we fully show up as who we are, we can get ostracized.
But the thing about what you're saying to me, when I think about that, and I understand the whole tribe situation and whatnot, mm-hmm. but if you look at groups performing together, in collaborative capacity, they're always going to be better than an individual in every situation, ultimately. So it's funny to me that society has never, at least in my lifetime, society has never really embraced that in terms of like everyone working together on a global level. And it always just fascinates me that we've always sort of taken the approach of like kill or be killed, like you talked about earlier on. So
it's fear. It's fear based. It's survival based. Yes.
Explain.
So instead of living from a space of heart, which is when kindness, compassion, you know, when I give my all and I compete with you, and mostly I compete with myself to achieve my greatness, to tap into my higher self. But through the messaging that we get from external environment is that there's so much fear that I go against you because one of us has to survive. Mm. That makes sense. There's lots of messaging externally coming from the news about, you know, financial states, diseases, anything, you know, that you compete with another person, you go against them, fear-based, because if I will not take for myself, you might take it from me, instead of thinking that there is abundance of everything and what's meant for you is already meant for you. So if I feel safe and secure in myself and trusting in my intuition, I compete with myself and my greatness is rooted in me wanting more for myself, for my soul to potentialize. But we don't think like that.
What's the actual science behind fear-based control? What's actually happening to our bodies when we're in a state of fight or flight and fear overtakes us? What's actually going on? Are you versed in that?
We can have different responses here. We can have different responses to fear. Fear, flight, fight, freeze, and disconnection and people pleasing. So every of those responses might feel differently in the body. Yes. Mm-hmm. When you freeze, you might fully shut down and you might not want to go to this deeper discussion because when we feel safe, we can have a comfortable conversation with somebody. We can even have a disagreement, but in our body, we feel safe and secure. When we feel threatened, our body can shut down. We might fight and flight. Yeah? So we might feel like we want to run away. We get anxious, we get so fearful. And when we have a freeze, it's total disconnection. I'm not sure if I went through all of them.
Yeah, you went through it fine. And what I was trying to, if I didn't explain the question properly, neurologically, what happens in our bodies when we're facing fear? Like, what is this actually going on? Are you familiar with that concept of neurologically what's happening?
So your nervous system get triggered. So imagine animal, yes, when you see animals in nature. When animal get chased by another animal, they normally get a chance to run away, yes? Mm-hmm. And then when the threat is gone, you see animals shaking and really, you know, do you have a dog when the dog gets scared? So the dog gets scared, but after a moment, after being scared, then he shakes his body. Mm-hmm. With humans, we experience so much stress nonstop. So there'll be email from a boss, there'll be situation that might be triggering for your individual nervous, for your individual nervous system blueprint, because we are all different, yes? Mm. How much stress you can take is different from somebody else's, yes? Mm-hmm. So our nervous system, all of our nervous system is wired out differently. So you get an email that you have a deadline, that something happens, you have a disagreement with your partner, or there's too many chores at home. So you get stressed out and tense. Then your nervous system is connected to all your organs. The blood and circulation is not getting to all of those organs, and you're not performing 100%. You might keep your stress and tension as well in your muscles, in your ligaments. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. And it's shortcutting our ability to function properly.
To function 100% properly, uh-huh. Yes.
You mentioned that you first started noticing this anxiety in your life around 14 years old. What, do you mind if I ask, what specifically was going on at 14 years old that was causing these panic attacks? What was there? I mean, I don't know if this is something you talk about, so if it's sensitive, don't share it. But
I had a mother that had mental health issues.
Mm. And there was abuse going on?
Yes.
Emotional, yes. Physical, both?
Both. Yeah, so there's mental, emotional, physical.
So first of all, kudos to you for being self-aware enough that 14 years old, when that kind of activity is happening to you, you realize that, you know, this isn't normal. But when you first started realizing that, what did that feel like to you, that you, at 14 years old, going through this abuse, you said you had the self-awareness that this couldn't be normal, and you started to figure out how to treat it yourself. You said you became your own psychologist. There's not many 14-year-olds, I don't think, that are self-aware enough to sort of have that feeling. What does that feel like to you, that fear or that fight or flight, if you will, that you realize that something wasn't right, wasn't normal about the situation, and that you needed to fix that?
I didn't want to become product of my environment. Mm. So at that stage, you know, I didn't know much about my nervous system. I knew more about my mindset and how my head operates. So at age 14, I so much didn't want to become a product of my environment. So I promised myself that I would create new identity for myself. I will find role models, or through books, or through people around me that would be kind and loving and supportive. And I basically have created this new identity for myself by repetition, by affirmation, by journaling. And then in recent years, I've realized how important is the nervous system in changing our identity. Because before, I was 100% sure that you just create your new identity on your mental, logical level. Then you subconsciously reprogram yourself. Yep, I will be confident. I'm strong. And everything will be okay. But I forgot about how important is the nervous system. Because if the nervous system is not regulated, if you're not feeling safe in this present moment, so it's safe to communicate, safe to show up, safe to move your body, safe to be seen, mm-hmm. You're still stuck in the past. And you're stuck in the past at age of the child, most of the time, of the child or teenager that experienced that traumatic experience, yes? So, you know, depending if it's a fight, flight, freeze, or people pleasing, you're still there. Doesn't matter that you're in adult's body, but if you have a conversation with your boss or with your colleague or with your partner and you get triggered, logically, you know, you want to act differently because you've read books, you listen to podcasts, you've done your inner work. You understand that, well, I'm working on myself. I should react differently. But what happened in a split second, it takes you back to through the timeline to the moment when, as a child, age 3, 4, 10, you got triggered and your nervous system responded in any of those ways. Or even imagine that there's a conversation with your partner and you're keeping your mouth shut because you don't want to release your anger. Mm. That situation reminds you about something that, you know, at age 17, that training with your dad. So you have so much anger that is pent up and you're feeling that anger, but you're not feeling safe enough to express that anger in a safe way in the present moment. So first we go.
So is that a safety mechanism by our bodies to fall back on that trauma period when this is happening? So if I experience that, because I experienced a lot of trauma before 17 years old. So did I hear you say that when we have this emotional response to something, like, for example, today as an adult, I have an emotional trigger that triggers me and then I lash out, uncontrolled lash out. Are you saying that lash out reverts us back to when that trauma first occurred to us as a child? Is that what I hear you saying?
So let's have a play. You don't have to share with me. Do you remember last time you had a conversation with your partner? Because that would be the most stronger feeling. Or with your kids. Do you remember last time you got triggered? Can you allow yourself to bring that trigger into your memory and into your body right now and feel that trigger in your body? Can you feel it?
Yeah, I feel it because there's something happened recently actually where I was triggered by something that I felt was egregiously accusing me of something.
Okay, beautiful. So somebody accused you of something. Do you remember feeling that feeling as a child? What is the first memory that you have of that sensation that you are feeling in your body right now?
Well, where do we begin? It happened all the time. So like, I always feel like my entire childhood was filled with like this constant paranoia and fear of something about to happen. Because I was having this conversation with my partner the other day. Mm. We were trying to recall fond memories. And I'm like, I can't really recall too many fond memories because most of the time I was like, literally, I felt like I was running for my life. So okay. I know what that feeling is.
Can you give me an age? Any age?
Honestly, I'm one of 12 children. So that trauma was going on as far back as I can remember, not just to me, but to my siblings that were older than me. So I was always witness to it. And it just sort of became like a normal way of life.
Beautiful. You're doing a great job, but you're talking to me from your headspace. Okay. And I would love for you. You're doing an amazing job, and I would love for you to feel it in your body.
Okay. So describe what it feels like.
Well, it's your feeling. So can you describe how it feels like and where it feels?
Yeah, I always feel it in my stomach.
In your stomach, beautiful.
Yeah.
Can you point it out, where in your stomach do you feel?
Yeah, I feel it in my gut and sort of climbing through my esophagus, like up through the channel towards my throat. And I actually, it manifests itself in sort of like, I can't describe it, but I get kind of choky, like I have like an inability to swallow my own saliva type of thing. And I end up like having to spit and like get almost like gag from time to time. And that happens whenever I get really anxious or nervous about something.
Beautiful. And if that feeling could say something to you right now, what would it say?
Well, in the moment or after the fact?
In the moment.
In the moment, it feels like I have to fight for my life. Like I have to prove that I'm right. I have to prove that this is the way it is, that sort of stuff. Like that there's only one course of action, and that's forward.
You're doing such a good job. So imagine that feeling is your inner child. Mm. There's a part of you your inner child at age, let's just say you couldn't tap into the age, but let's just say he's 3-4 years old, that he has to fight. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So as an adult right now, your responses when you trigger are the responses of the 3-year-old little boy. So you're responding from a nervous system of 3 or 4 year old little boy that thinks, I need to fight to survive. I need to fight to survive. So your partner might have a question to you or ask you to do something. Your nervous system get triggered. You go back to the inner child and the inner child say, no, I need to fight. I need to fight to survive. How does it feel when I say that to you? How does it feel?
It makes perfect sense.
Okay. So I want you to understand, we have this adult that you are here right now that understands what I say. Then we have that part inner child that is wounded in that situation. And in life, we have many, many parts that are fragmented from ourselves. When we have situation that parts of us are not accepted, or we have situation that they are dangerous, parts of us separate. So that part that we're talking right now, that inner child, if you could talk to him, that little boy, and become the most loving parent. And now question, will that inner boy, what does he need, dad or mom? Can you ask him? Can you feel into that?
I didn't realize this was going to be a therapy session, so thank you.
You want me? I can change.
No, we're good.
Not with
you. No, it's okay. It's supposed to be me asking you questions, not the other way around.
I'm sorry.
No, it's all good.
Can shift it.
I'm only joking. I'm fine with this. If I had to speak to my little self, and who do I need?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I probably need both my parents, to be honest with you. My mom wasn't allowed to parent me, and my dad didn't parent me, so I missed out on both of those dynamics. So both of them, really.
Could you feel into it? So you're doing amazing, but you spend lots of time in your head, not connecting to the body. If you like, just drop in, say, who do I need? Do I need to be in the arms of my mom or my dad? That little boy.
Probably my father.
Beautiful. That's so good. That's nice. And what would that little boy like to hear from a father, perfect father?
I don't really know how to answer this because I've thought about this a lot, actually. Mm-hmm. I think that just once I would have wanted him not to always pressure me for everything.
Beautiful. So two things to that, yes? In the moment when we talk to our inner child, we are the one that become a perfect parent. So we are the one that we are reparenting our child. So it's not your dad, you becoming the dad that boy needed. What kind of dad would you be to? You have two beautiful daughters. How do you talk to them when you go to them on their level?
Well, I talk to them the way that I feel a parent should talk to their children, which is love and kindness and adoration and mutual respect.
Talk to this part, that trigger boy, the same way. That's reparenting, and we don't do that. I guarantee that inside your head, you speak to yourself the same way as your dad spoke to you. So that inner child that lives inside you gets that voice nonstop. Do better. Try harder. That's not good enough. So he's always on edge. He's always stressed out. He's always overwhelmed. So our thoughts and our emotions produce chemistry in our body, cortisol, adrenaline. That chemistry impacts our nervous system, impacts our vagal tone, impacts how the energy is in our body and around our body. And it impacts how we feel inside our body. You see, most of my clients, they will have a tight jaw, shoulders high, problems with their hips. It's all the emotions that are stacked and suppressed in the body that hasn't been released. And emotions are just energy emotions. So the energies that we suppressed as kids because it was traumatic, they're still inside our body. We have suppressed anger. Anger is in the liver. So when we drink, the toxicity comes out. Some people can be quite aggressive or toxic when they drink.
Alcohol,
yes.
So are you suggesting that when I feel triggered, that it's at that moment that I would talk to myself, I would parent myself in that moment as if I was parenting my younger version of myself from the context of what I know now?
Yes, 100%. So what I normally say, you come back to yourself, you time travel to the moment that you felt that sensation. So it's not in the head. We spend so much time in our heads, but in the head we have stories, beliefs, programs, patterns of behavior, yes?
Yeah.
That's all in our head. And we get disconnected. We don't connect to our heart and we don't connect to our physical body. How does it feel? Where do I store in my physical body that emotion? You know, can I move forward in life with freedom or do I feel stuck? So we tap into our body. We travel back through nervous system to the child. We reparent the child and then question to ourselves, okay, I got triggered by something. Whatever triggered me in that person, do I do the same things to others and how I do the same things to myself? But the first step is regulating your nervous system. Because if you make that boy feel safe and you have a conversation with him that he's, you know, you, hey, darling, I validate your feeling. Yeah, that felt like she's questioning it, that, you know, they don't appreciate you, that you have to always looking out for safety for yourself. It must be hard. So imagine that you saying that to yourself, your feelings are validated. All that armor, protective armor that you have, there's no need for protection.
Are you asking me a question like what was my sigh about?
Yes.
I just sort of had an aha moment about a few things. That when my triggers occur around anything, whether it be losing a bid on a project or my child doing something or whatever, they sort of always have the same type of patterns to them.
Is that a pattern? It is the pattern from childhood, yes?
It would have to be. I don't know. I've never had trauma other than in my childhood. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned early on in this that we sort of live in this survival mode, and you lived in survival mode for many years. Mm-hmm. How does living in that survival mode impact our physical health and our mental health and our state of being in general? What's actually happening at that in that moment?
So imagine yourself waking up when you're in survival. So your way of thinking is, what bad can happen? What am I doing wrong? So your problem-focused thinking, inner critic is loud. The emotion that you're living from is fear, insecure, doubt. All of that chemistry of energy is around you. You vibrate at that frequency. All your organs, they vibrate at the frequency. The vagus nerve vibrates at the low frequency. Your whole body is tense because you're not feeling. When we're scared, we close up. We tense. Yes, the tummy gets tense. The shoulders roll forward because I don't want to show my heart. I can create energetic wall, protective wall, because I don't want to get hurt from other people. So I might say that I want to connect to other people, but I'm emotionally unavailable because I'm protecting myself because I know how painful it is when I let people in. Mm. So we have this invisible wall to protect ourselves. When we not in fight or flight, we feel safe, we dance, we laugh, we sing, we move our body, we use our voice. We use our hands to move. We feel open. We feel free.
In one of your Instagram posts, you did, I don't recall how recent it was, but you talked about if a person is constantly looking for feedback from their friends or feedback from their partner or feedback from their husband or their wife or their whatever, that there is some unresolved experience and trauma that is sort of that is occurring that's necessary for them to get constructive feedback, and they don't, we don't necessarily handle it the way we're supposed to handle it because of past traumas. Can you extrapolate on that a little bit and what that means?
So again, we're traveling back to the past when everything got created. Yes. So when your nervous system, when the child is growing and is developing attachment to adults, imagine that you're sitting at home, there's busy family. So much is happening. You're sitting on the floor playing with your toys and you're looking at your siblings and your parents and you're bidding for attention and you're bidding if it's safe for you to be seen. Is this behavior is accepted? Or if you behave this way or show up this way, will that be punished or dismissed? So as a trauma survival kids, we always calibrate people around us. As a kid, yes, mm-hmm. We know when it's safe for us to be playful, when it's safe for us mm-hmm. to say something, or maybe it's not safe because dad is tired and mom has so much to do that she doesn't want to talk to us. So then we hide and withdraw, and that get imprinted into us.
That need to calibrate gets imprinted.
That need to calibrate to always.
You're sort of constantly always on edge. You don't really quite know how to approach a situation.
Mm-hmm. And you know what is very interesting? Lots of spiritual people, lots of empathetic people, they think that they have this gift that they can read people well. Mm. They just learn from a childhood, calibrate other people. Mm. So what you're doing when you were a child, what you were doing, you were just calibrating your environment to check, okay, am I safe today? Is mom or dad in a happy mood? Will they have time for me? What's going on with my siblings? Will I get in trouble if I do this and that? I really don't want to get in trouble. So I learn how to read their body language, their energy, and how to adjust. So then when we go, when we move on in our life and we grow up as an adult, we still have that nervous system that is always, and our physical body that is always calibrating our external environment. And when we get into relationships, it is important that we find somebody that we can have a relationship that they can create safe space for us. And sometimes it can be first time in our life where we have a safe space. So our nervous system, first of all, might get scared because it's not a chaos. So it's not familiar. So when you have a safe friend or safe partner or safe therapist where they are not judgmental, critical, they allow you to be you. They allow you to express all emotions, all feelings. Everything that you are is welcome. Who you are is welcome. Not only the sort of called positive parts of you, but everything, the moody you, the sad you, the emotional you, yes, the fragile you, the vulnerable you, everything is beautiful, everything is making you who you are, everything is welcome. So I'm creating that safe space for you. Now, you don't know that, you do not recognize that. So first of all, it will be very scary for you to start putting those walls down, to be vulnerable, because what you might be thinking, if I'm vulnerable and I put my walls down, that person will hurt me. Mm. And quite often people that are, we might call them emotion shut down or have walls, they're very sensitive, beautiful souls that cannot take, they got hurt so much and they cannot take any more pain. Mm. So being disconnected and pushing everyone away, it's better for them, it's safer for them than opening up the heart, allowing other people in, because they still remember in a cellular level that pain. So you have that safe space, and then if that partner, that coach, the therapist, when you start opening up, they meet your needs for reassurance.
Can I ask a question about something you just said? So if you're not in a safe relationship with somebody as an adult,
yes,
and there's more trauma that's going on, because there is studies that show that if you grew up in abusive environments, and if you grew up in unsafe environments, especially with your parents, that you tend to sometimes date similar types of relationships in that capacity. I know there's a lot of studies on that. When you grow up in an unsafe environment and you incur all of this trauma that sort of stacks upon itself year after year, and then as an adult, you continue to put yourself in unsafe relationships. Does that trauma, I'm assuming the trauma is exacerbated by that, obviously, right? But does it also continue to layer for continued experiences? And what's the tipping point? So if you grew up in an unsafe environment, and then you get yourself involved in a marriage or a relationship in a romantic capacity in an unsafe environment, whether it's emotionally abusive, physically abusive, or both, what is the tipping point for somebody where there's almost a point of no return? Or is there always a salvageable situation if somebody is able and willing to get help and put in the work?
There is always hope. There is always way out. We just have to make different choices. When we used to being in a toxic environment, we choose our partners. If we haven't done healing work, if we haven't done the deeper inner work, if we haven't looked at our programs, beliefs, if we're not self-aware, if we haven't looked at into our inner child or dealing with our shadow, we're going to choose partners that feel familiar to our family dynamic.
If we haven't done the work up to that point.
Yes, because it feels familiar. It feels safe. It feels safe. This man, this woman, there's so much chemistry. I feel so attracted. But we don't ask, like, do they feel like my mom or do they feel like my dad? Do they feel like chaos, abandonment, rejection, criticism? Because it feels familiar. I don't have a different blueprint. You see, who you are right now was created in your family environment. That's your blueprint at home. You got your blueprint of for who you are at home. As a little child, again, going back to the little child, that little child is sitting on the carpet. And when he was born, he was so innocent. He was so pure, so beautiful. And he's like looking, my God, my mom, she's a goddess. This is my first love for woman. That's the first woman that I've met. I was in her belly. I was connected to her. She nurtures me. Okay, how she pays attention to me and how she loves me, that's what women do. That's how women are. She's my role model for women. Then I go back to my dad. Dad is the god. So how that is, that's my role model how to be a man. That's how men are.
Yes. And that's how we view it at that point.
That's how we view. You're not questioning it.
So if you didn't have a nurturing mother, or you didn't have a mother that was hugging you or loving you or nurturing you and caring for you, you have a viewpoint of women based upon that paradigm.
You have a point of view that love, that's how love feels like. That's love. That's your blueprint for love. Love feels like that.
So that manifests itself in, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Yeah. So that manifests itself in your inability to trust people, perhaps your inability to be transparent and vulnerable, et cetera.
Because that's not love. You don't have that blueprint.
So based upon
family.
So based upon the type of work that you're doing, and you do Reiki healing, you do mind-body connection, you're doing what I think I saw was called theta healing or something of that effect.
Yeah, Kundalini.
Kundalini. So in this work, you're teaching adults how to remove that trauma and have created a different paradigm, a different self perspective, and learn to love themselves. How does that? Can you talk us a little bit about that work and how you do that?
I'm very alternative. So. I use kinesiology psychology.
Okay.
before my clients come to the session, I have charts and I connect to the own body and the or their own energies. And I have charts with emotions and charts with programs. So I do a little bit read on, I connect to the charts, connect to the energy. And then when I have a conversation with a client, when they come in, I don't necessarily tell them that I already done the reading on them, but I listen to what they say and match that with energy reads on their body. Does that make sense? No,
it you makes have. Perfect. You know, I've done some of this with other people. Oh, so it makes perfect beautiful. Sense.
So you know, I'll be honest. If some people, some of my clients can be more logical, and I don't want to say, hey, I just this is your energy, energy reading, because that might like, oh yeah, what is she talking about? Yes,
scare them off right away.
Scare them off, and my aim is to get them as comfortable as open, so whatever is there in their body, energetically and emotion can express. So first part of the session, we have a little bit conversation about how they got created, what the model of reality they live in, what's the blueprint of the relationship, of the blueprint of being men, female, and we talk about the issue that they want to address during the session. So that's the first part of the session, is just unpacking and educating them and helping them to understand on a logical level that this is where it stems from, that behavior, that stuckness, that discomfort, lack of authenticity, you have learned that somewhere, and this is your role model that you've learned it from. That's a part of the first part of the session. After that part of the session is finished, then we do somatic release. So that is connecting to through the body, opening your body energetically through the movement, tapping, Tai Chi moves, breathing in, sanding, and then clearing energy centers and clearing your whole body. And that is basically resetting who you are.
How long do these programs typically take before you start seeing dramatic results?
After one session.
Oh, really?
So
you're that good.
I'm not saying that I'm that good. I'm not saying
I need a session then.
we have to understand that when somebody comes into my session, they normally blame them, shame themselves, and they think, what's wrong with me? There must be something really, really terrible wrong with me. It's all me. I'm the one that is dysfunctional. I'm the one that is having this terrible life. So by helping them understand that what they're doing, it's a coping mechanism. Mm. It's a survival skill. It's learned behavior. It's like being, you know, like me and my client, we just like little detectives. I'm like, okay. And where is that from? And who modeled that to you? And what do you think that means? And we're not sitting all the time in a space in our heads. We're like, okay, what is your body saying to that? And what would your space in your heart say to that? Where is the truth of, where is your truth in that situation and who you really are? Because we do not know how to be authentically ourselves. And it's not, I'm not saying that I know what it is, because there is always another level. But we copy behaviors of people around us. So imagine you had so many people around you when you were growing up, so many different role models. So it's for you, it's not only, doesn't matter it's positive or not so positive.
Okay. Thank you for that qualification.
Yeah. Yes. So many different role models that will teach you about so many things, how to play games, how to regulate your emotions, how to cook, how to clean, how to be a man. Everyone has impact you. But do you remember who you are before you had all this bunch of people that were always around you, that chaos, that noise that is always around you, impacting your inner self? Because we are like sponges.
Before all those outside influences affected my perception, my perspective.
Yeah. And then.
Go ahead.
And then imagine how triggering it can be when you decide to, okay, who am I? And you start, it's like taking layers of clothing from yourself. I'm okay, that's my brother, that's my sister, that's my mom, that's another sister or brother. I'm like, oh, wow, where am I underneath of that? And that can be very scary as well.
It's a bit overwhelming to think about if you just stop and consider that you're carrying. So in my case, I'm in my 40s, that for 40 years, I've been carrying all of this trauma, just building up. And I've only started addressing it in the last 10 years or so, because I was never really self-aware of it before. And I think I make a pretty strong argument when I would say that most people really aren't directly aware of this mind-body connection and how the two are directly interconnected with each other, and what you do to one affects the other. But more importantly, that you hold on to this trauma indefinitely if you don't address it. So if you were working with clients, and after you've done some of the programs that you put them through, at what point do people really start to grasp the connection between mind, body, and what can they do going forward after working with you to sort of make sure they're always staying on the right track with things?
That would depend of an individual person. People with more complex traumas or stronger emotional armor that they have around them, protective armor that they have around themselves, it probably would take few sessions for them to start releasing from the body, because they will have to feel safe. Mm-hmm. So they can understand logically what's going on, but physically, to allow atoms, molecules, cells, whole body and nervous system to okay, I can make a sound, I can scream, I can say something, I can feel the emotions, I can allow the energy to flow through me. I will not get stuck in the emotion of shame, pain, anger, grief. If I open myself, and it's such a beautiful and safe and safe process, you know, when your body knows when it's in a company of somebody that can hold that safe space, and there is a report, that your body will start tremor, will start shivering, will start opening itself energetically, and then after the session that they have with me, they get their own practices, their own exercises they can do, and they can connect more to their own body, and they can literally embody themselves through their own practices of move, grounding, breath, making sound, laughter, dancing.
Are there ever situations where you've had clients where they're beyond your, and they would need to see somebody more specialized, for example, or have you ever encountered a situation like that? You have.
Yes. Yes, of course. Mm-hmm. There will be the people that they have subscribed to their mental stories. So I believe in everything that I have in my head. I believe in the stories that I have created about myself, who I am. This is my identity. I am, it's hard for me to, no one can save me. No one can help me. This is the way I'm going to be all my life. World is not a safe place. This is the box and reality that I exist. And I'm not ready to go outside that box. So if we believe that that's our reality, then I cannot shift that. Mm-hmm.
Can we go back for the last part of our conversation, back to the parenting model? I have a lot of curiosities around that. Being a father myself, and I've been a single father for almost 13 years now with my two daughters. Mm-hmm. And so raised them primarily by myself. And because I've only started doing this work on myself in the last, you know, let's just say really diligently in the last 5 to 8 years, I suspect that some of my parenting tactics prior to my self-awareness around how I was parenting and how I showed up as a father weren't always necessarily in line with how I view them today. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense of what I'm saying? So do you think that that could have a negative effect on my children in a sense? And that, I'm not saying that I was did anything pernicious or abusive. I was never in that regard, but I do see how my role as a parent is today is markedly different than my role as a parent was, you know, 13 years ago when my daughter's 17 and 15 respectively. So if I take on the perspective of who my father was, and that's my version of my role model as a father, then certainly there must be something that I had done in my early years as a parent that was similar to that. Right? By logic, is, I mean, that's kind of what I heard you saying.
Yes.
And not that I ever did any of the things that my father did to me, but I do recall being less patient, for example, or maybe less tolerant of something, or maybe more judgmental of something than I would be today. So those characteristics that I was exhibiting in those early days of my parenting, those were just modeling techniques that I had picked up from my father. So how does that play? Sorry, this is a really long question and it took me a while to get to the point. How does that play in the minds of my children, given that I might have been exhibiting qualities to them that were less qualitative as a parent should be? Does that make sense how I'm asking that?
Yes, I first of all, well done on doing all that work and being so self-aware. Can you see in your girls the impact of your early years of parenting that would be negative
or limiting? Well, I don't know. I've asked myself this question a lot, and by all intents and purposes, my children are simply marvelous. They're both wonderful athletes, both academically gifted. But one of them will be going off to college next year. But I also see patterns in them that I have seen patterns in myself over the years, especially early on in my adult life, where scarcity, insecurities around stuff, things that I have been working on, like my shadow, for example, like I've been working on my shadow work for the last few years really diligently. And so I see things in them sometimes that either they took from me epigenetically, or they somehow picked up through their childhood with, maybe because their mom and dad got divorced early on. Like, I don't even know. Like, I'm not a psychologist. But yes, to answer your question, I see things in both of them from time to time that are less than optimal. But then the question begs me to ask is that something to do with what I did? Or is that a product of their environment? You know, they live in this world of social media and comparisonitis and bullying and all these crazy things that go on with kids. And I don't know if you have kids, but like, it's a fucking motherfucker out there for my kids. Like, the shit that they have to go through every single day, the stories they come home with. Like, I'm not trying to sound like I'm an old, like my grandfather, but man, we didn't have to deal with this stuff when we were in school. It's crazy to me.
Did you spend lots of time with your grandfather when you were growing up?
Yes, because he was the only one that was nice to me.
There's your another role model. How much of grandfather is inside you?
I hope a lot, because he was, as a child, he was really the only ever adult that I had in my life that, from a family perspective, that ever was patient with me or tolerant with me or kind to me. So I spent every minute I possibly could with him. And my dad hated that I spent so much time with him, but you know, there was nothing he could do about it. So
to answer your question, it can be both. Yes. A little bit of you, a little bit of the environment right now. It's all that is impacting us. The more important question I will be asking, how is my level of communication, vulnerability, deeper conversation with my daughters right now about everything that is going on inside them, being vulnerable, validating their emotions, being their supporter? Am I creating safe space for them to fully show up? Can they come to me and be vulnerable? Am I the role model? Am I being the role model? Am I allowing myself to be vulnerable and admitting my mistakes with them, so they can see that I'm a human, that as a father, I can make mistakes, and how much you love and care for them? that would be the questions I'll be asking myself if I were you, and how can I create deeper connection with them, acceptance, approval of them, and understand the model of reality that they operate and what's important for them, and be curious about what is going on inside, and how can you be that kind of support for them.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that.
What's done, it's done. But it doesn't say that it's set in stone. Everyone can change. If you make changes, small choices every day to take you different direction, you will change. The change doesn't have to always be this dramatic. Oh my goodness, I had so much trauma. I wake up tomorrow, I feel different. Mm-hmm. You ask me about my sessions. Do they feel better? Yes, they do. Because first they talk about it, but then I take them to different physical state. They release from the body. The mind is quiet for a second. The different brain spheres are activated. The nervous system regulates. They feel lighter. They got that 1 hour of peace, calmness that they might not have got for years, and they cannot even get there with meditation. So yeah, it makes change. And after a session like that, they get hope. Oh my God, I can feel different. I've never felt right. I don't remember last time when there was no voices in my head, or this heaviness coming out of my body. Or I had so many clients that are male, and like, I've never cried. I don't cry. And they're so terrified when we have a session, and the energy flow through them, and they allow themselves to release tears, emotions in the form, or energies in the form of tears. And that is so healing.
And so I heard you say you work with men and women.
Yes.
Do you work with young adults or just adults?
No, I'm just adults. I've had few kids, but it's not something that I can really relate and be honest, because I don't have kids.
Yeah.
And I think you do to authentically work with kids and relate with them. I think that you would have to have kids, and it's my take on it.
It's an interesting take on it, because there is a lot of people who operate in your sphere and psychologists, et cetera, that feel completely opposite of that. And I tend to agree with you that you have to have children to sort of have a full context of that, but I'm not a doctor, so what do I know?
I only work, coach, or share things on my social media with people that I went through on my clients, because I can resonate with it. And and I'm not saying that this is the best way of working as a coach or healer, but it works for me, because energetically I can read your energy and I can tune in, and I understand your journey.
Reading energy, I'm fascinated by that, because I've met with some other Reiki healers in the past. I've had a couple of women on the show that do that. Is that something you can learn, or is that just sort of an innate ability that you have?
You learn that. Of course, like with everything, with Reiki, you learn that. And of course, like with everything, you can get better at it and you'll be more gifted, like an athlete, yeah? You can learn how to run and be a sprinter, but you get better the more you train, the more you practice, and you get better if it's in your genetics. And if you are if you're a sensitive child and you can read your environment, you can read the energy. You just have to give yourself permission.
You just said something that really struck a chord with me. It's amazing to me how accepting we are and how focused and dedicated we are to work out and stay fit and run on the treadmill and go to the gym and, you know, eat healthy and do all these things. But when it comes to taking care of our minds and doing activities to exercise our minds, for whether it's meditation, whether it's visualization, whether it's doing healings and things like this that you're offering, we're always so reluctant to step into that. Why?
Because we spend so much time in our mind. We spend so much time in our stories. So if I ask you, how is your day when you wake up? From the moment you wake up with a story and something to do, a narrative that is continually going in your head. And if you're not present to that narrative, if you're not having some kind of control, I call it, if you don't control the dragon inside your head, the dragon inside your head will pull you different directions.
Yeah.
So when we learn how to, okay, start your day, what my first thought is, do I connect to the gratitude and appreciation for this day for being alive? Where do I go? Do I go to social media, to my responsibilities, or allow myself to be present to the environment? I mean, I'm going to say hello to my daughters. I'm going to give them hug and kiss. I'm going to welcome them with open heart and say, hey, I love you. I appreciate you. I wish you an amazing day. Different energy, different vibration. Then we have different emotions. We feel better. We feel more grateful. Then we're in this beautiful energetic vortex that more beautiful things are coming into us because we vibrate at a higher frequency. But most of us, we wake up and we, oh gosh, I have to do this and that. What else to do? So many chores. I'm like, oh, I haven't done this. This person didn't reply to that. Oh, I haven't paid for this. So we forget about the beauty. Mm-hmm. We forget that we are this beautiful soul that is in the human body. And we're supposed to experience this life in the most beautiful way, but we don't know how to do it. We experience our life from the stories that we have in our head.
And we just repeat that over and over.
We repeat that over and over. If imagine that every day you wake up in the morning and you have a list of beautiful things that light your soul, yes? So it's like, again, welcoming your daughters and be really present and attentive when you greet them. Having dinner when you share best takes from your day, what was the most beautiful? Really honoring your daughters as the goddesses that they are. Really respecting and honoring yourself as a god as you are, cherishing yourself. Every time you hear that critical voice inside your head, you put a volume down and say, I'm not doing that. I'm going to love every part of myself. If shame comes up, if guilt come up, if grief come up, I'm going to love that part. I'm going to integrate into my heart and I'm going to allow my nervous system to feel the way it wants to feel. And I will love that inner child and I bring it to my heart and I'm like, you're so accepted. Let's celebrate this life. Every day, your intention is to celebrate yourself and everyone else. And then imagine that you can achieve your dreams and goals, not by punishing yourself and saying how little you do and how bad you are, but, oh my God, if I live from a space in my heart and my body is light and I fully feel safe to show up with my voice, my conviction, how many life I can impact by being so unique.
Mm. It's almost like when you're saying all that, the first thing that pops into my mind is if you just continue to repeat those patterns of negativity in terms of the way you think about things and you know, your outlook on life, it's almost like self-abuse. And it's really, and I would imagine that the impact of that is really not that different from the emotional abuse that you received from someone else as a child. It's like basically you're just repeating that pattern. Is that a correct assessment?
Autoimmune diseases in our body comes from self-abuse.
Wow. Go ahead.
No, you go.
No, go ahead. Continue. I interrupted you.
Because autoimmune is your cells attacking you. So you being the victim and you being the perpetrator at the same time.
So autoimmune diseases, when people have things like allergies and things of that nature, does that also fall into that same category?
No, that's sensitivity. So you're sensitive, yeah. So you're sensitive. So that we connected to your gut, digesting emotions, and sensitive to things, to people, to their energy. So I would say if you have a gut issues, you probably, your boundaries are not set, not solid. And boundaries with other people, with yourself, and your energetic aura might have tears and blockages.
Let me ask you this question as it pertains, because I don't actually think it's allergies. And I'm asking, one of my daughters has, from time to time, she gets this like skin itch rash on her face and in certain parts of her body. And we've taken her to allergists, we've taken her to doctors, and nobody really understands what it is.
Okay, and so
and she's really, but she gets really stressed and anxious about things.
Yeah, so that's her stress. So can you tell me what parts of her body she's getting that on?
Primarily her face, her forehead and her face.
Okay. Face. Who I am, how people perceive me, my face. So how I want to be seen, how people perceive me. Yeah, the character that I'm playing.
I understand, yeah.
Yeah, so it would be interesting to ask her questions, okay, around that, how she wants to be seen. If her ego or identity that she have for herself was questioned, she's embarrassed of something. Stressed out, embarrassed, ashamed. Stressed out, embarrassed, shame. And she get tight in her belly as well.
Yeah, ooh, yeah.
She does. Oh, she has anxieties. So it's the belly for her, movement, dancing, and she has a tight through the back and shoulders.
Yeah, she does have tightness through her back. She tends to lean. She tends to lean over.
Yes, I can feel it. I forgot. I tune into her. Sorry. I've allowed myself to tune into her. Yes, I can feel it. Another thing is as well, she's so scared to speak up, like the truth, the authenticity. She's scared to speak up. She's more timid.
Well, this has been a fantastic conversation. I could go on for a few more hours with this. For people who are interested in learning to reconnect their mind and their bodies and live a more holistic, healthier life, what are some practical things outside of visiting you and having sessions with you, which I would highly encourage everyone. But outside of that, what are some things that people could do to start taking better care of themselves and establishing a better mind-body connection?
Mm-hmm. So it's so simple because all the practices are free. Allow yourself time where you're not on social media. So out of your head, into your heart or into your body. Grounding practice is beautiful. So your feet connected to the earth and you're just being present. Meditation, but if meditation is too hard for you because probably your mind is going 1,000 miles an hour, you can try ice bath or cold showers. And again, here we can be mindful of it because if your nervous system is really, really stressed out, having cold exposure can be stressful, extra stressful on top of it. Connecting to the energy of sun, listening to the music, dancing in your own room, belly laughs, connecting to the safe people, spending time with friends, and just maybe asking yourself what's stressing you and taking that thing out of your life. And become the most loving, nurturing, supportive, kind and compassionate in a parent to yourself.
In all of my years of having people on shows, podcasting, reading, multiple therapists, etc., I've never heard anybody give that advice before. Acting as the parent to your own child. To your own self.
Can I tell you something?
Always.
You know, I heard that term, reparent yourself. I'm like, yeah, reparent yourself. I'm going to get shivers. And then, so I've sat with many ceremonies, many healing circles. I took medicine, plant medicine, and it was helpful and beautiful. But you know what was the most beautiful thing? When I had women coming to me, putting hand on my head and nurturing me with kindness, compassion, and being loving mother. When I start parenting myself, I had to write pages in my journal. What does it mean? Because I reparent myself like my mom did reparent me. Mm. Harsh, firm, more non-emotional. I could not even feel my emotions when I start doing my work because it was so scary. And then when I said, okay, you feel emotions. I'm like, I don't know. I don't know how to feel my anger because I get punished for feeling anger. I get punished for having voice and opinion. So then I had to like, oh, wow, what is the mother? She's nurturing, not judgmental. And then suddenly, this is so terrifying. I don't know how to be kind. I know how to say, come on, not a big deal. No one, that's okay. You're a little bit upset, tough it up. No, I want to feel upset now. That was not nice. And then finding role model for my father. Like, what are fathers? What do they do? I had to Google up. What is the help? I really did. I'm like, because I didn't have resources. Mm. Where are they, like, my resources were Polish men, which is, not, hey, you're a beautiful goddess, you're a woman. How can I create safe space for you? Everything that you are. And the same for men. Do you know why I have men coming to my session and my sessions with men are so successful? Because I don't look at you like a man. I look at you as you are a soul. Mm. You do not have to play a character of a man. You can just be a soul. Soul, beautiful soul, and express itself. And they don't know how to do it. It's so terrifying.
That's interesting you say that. I had a conversation. I'm sorry, I'm getting off topic, and I know you probably have to leave soon. But I had a conversation with a really close friend of mine recently, and we were talking about, you know, all of this gender stuff that's going on in society right now, and gender dysmorphia, and people uncertain on what they are. And I don't really have an opinion on it, to be honest with you. I think people should do what they think is right for them. But it struck me that, going way off topic here, but I just wonder your opinion on this, because you said something that was really beautiful just now about a soul, how you view people. Mm-hmm. If I could imagine a future scenario way off in the distant future, when humanity has hopefully evolved or ascended or whatever the chronology of that looks like, the vernacular around it, I would imagine that there, the idea of gender doesn't really even exist in a highly evolved entity. It's just, you are a soul. You're just a spirit, and you have masculine and feminine tendencies. It's like, it's in a perfect harmonious balance. So it's hard to say that this is the stepping stone for what's going on right now. And I'm not saying that it is or isn't, just, I'm not making a supposition on that. It's just an observation that I had, that in a future version of humanity, a highly evolved version of us, mm-hmm. gender wouldn't matter. We would just be spiritual souls in sort of like perfect harmonious balance, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And again, what's right, what's not? Because your point is valid. And then another thing is as well, where is it coming from? Because they're really feeling inside, or because we so much want to be different and unique? This need of want to be different, unique, yeah. Noticed and seen. And if I do this, then I'm seen. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what I mean? Well, you know what? It will unfold with a time.
Yeah. At what cost, I wonder, though?
Well, you know what? As long we're doing our part of having honest conversation, kindness, compassion, support, we're doing our part.
Conversations like this.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for creating space for conversations like this.
You're welcome. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to have you on for this conversation to begin with in the first place. So, well... Yeah. If people would like to find you, Aneta, they can find you on Instagram. That's the best spot. Again, I've really enjoyed this conversation with you today. But if people do want to find you, can you just share a little bit more about your Instagram, your website, some of the things you have going on? Because I know you've got workshops and virtual and physical and all the things. Can you just share a little bit of information with everyone who's listening?
Yeah. So right now I'm taking clients one-on-one, because I love working one-on-one with energy. This is what I do as well. I have online clients all over the world and preparing myself for workshops as well. But it will be only in Australia on the Gold Coast. So if you're in Australia on the Gold Coast, you're more than welcome to join us. The workshops are about regulating nervous system, and embody more of your authentic self and clearing energy centers. Mm-hmm. Working with everything that we just talked about, the inner child reparenting, stepping into yourself, meeting yourself for the first time, understanding on the mental level, tapping into your heart, and releasing from your physical body, because it all has to happen in a three levels.
There were a lot of things that you said today that really resonated with me, and we unpacked a few of them. We didn't have enough time to talk about all the things, but I think as we close today's episode, I think the biggest takeaway that I picked up on, and I want to leave with you, the listeners, is that we do have the ability and the power to transform whatever yes. it is that we're dealing with right now. Mm-hmm. And if we're willing to be vulnerable with ourselves and go through that process, whether with an expert like yourself or even with ourselves to begin with. Mm-hmm. In this exercise that you talked about, you know, talking to your inner child as if you are the parent of your own child is a great way to start, right?
Most loving, kind, compassion parent.
Annetta, thank you so much. I appreciate your time on the show today. Thank you for everyone who's listening on this really enlightening journey. I think for me, you know, the whole point of this podcast is to question everything and to continue to learn, not just unlearn, but learn and change. It is possible to change the perspectives that we hold, whether it's our own personal perspectives of how we view ourselves, how we view the world, how we judge people, whatever it is. We all have the choice in how we proceed next. And so if there's anything about this show that resonated with you and made you question or made you think about something in that regard to put you on a journey of improving yourself in one way, shape, or the other, that's going to have a ripple effect on everyone around you, right? Even whether you know them or not. So that's the reason why I started this podcast, is so that I could connect with people like yourself and all the amazing individuals across this planet that I would have never had the chance to meet had I not started this show. And who knows where this goes? I get messages and DMs from people every episode about something you said or something a guest said that changed their life and changed the way the way they viewed something. So thank you for that. I get goosebumps when I think about it. Something you said today is going to change someone's life. And like, what the fuck, man? That's amazing. So thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you. Honestly, you're doing amazing work and keep shining your beautiful light. And thank you very much to your audience for having me here.
You're welcome. And thank you, Melissa and Fernando, for helping put the show together. Without you, it's not possible. And thank you for everyone who listens to the show. We'll be back next week. We have another exciting show planned for you. And if there's anything you'd like to hear, or Annetta, if you have a guest that you think would be brilliant for the show, please recommend them to us. That goes for our listeners. If you have somebody that you know or you yourself would like to be a guest,